It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Good afternoon, good morning, as the case is. We never know.
Mark.
We share your show on Tuesdays and Saturday mornings.
Saturday mornings.
And people are really enjoying your insights into behavior and issues people deal with in all different areas of life. But one of your specialties is marriage, marriage counseling, and you want to take a look at marriage improvement this week.
Yeah, and specifically what we think of this called systematic or systemic model of counseling. One of the things that, of course, when you're married couples that are on track, their marriage is on track, they know that marriage is, it's about change. You have to keep changing. And in fact, that's what Christian marriage is about. Biblical marriage is about changing us, you know, from glory to glory. He's changing us into his likeness and his image. A scripture verse and even a little tune we used to sing that went along with that. But the so it is about change, and when people come for marriage counseling, we talk about change and who has to change and how they're going to change, and everybody has an opinion when they come in of, you know, as to who should be doing the changing or who has to change first.
And they use you as the change agent?
They use
me think that you're going to be the person that's going to whip someone into shape?
Yeah. No, I've had some interesting experiences in that regard where one would bring the other one in, or actually sometimes assign the partner to go in and get counseling, and here's what I want you to tell him, or here's what I want you to this is what I want him to tell you, or or something like that. So, but the fact is that behaviors in relationships are very much like a dance, and so there's a systemic model, and I'm just going to elaborate on that just really briefly here.
Okay.
The systemic model basically says that that a family or a relationship becomes a system, and each person's part or role is dependent upon the role of the part of the other person. So, for example, a family might come for family counseling, and they have a junior, maybe is 16 years old, and he's got his driver's license, and he's causing all sorts of trouble. So the family comes for counseling. Junior doesn't come, and the family reports on junior and how that junior is the problem. So the counselor says, next time, bring junior. So they show up again. Again, junior's gone, and the thing is that he took the keys at the last minute and took the car, and they don't know where he's at. So most people would just look at that and say, yes, because he's the problem, and of course he's going to continue. But the systemic view is that the family is electing junior to sabotage change. The family doesn't want to change, and so they elect junior to sabotage that. So the family is a system. The marriage relationship is a system, and the behaviors are almost like a codependency situation set up. So, for example, person A has a behavior, and person B is in some way encouraging or reinforcing that behavior, whether it's a good or bad behavior. So person A, and the reason I say A and B rather than the husband and wife is because I have to flip-flop them less times on the radio.
Right.
So person A instinctively encourages person B's behavior because it reinforces person A's default position in some way. For example, person A might develop a controlling or in-charge kind of personality, and we've talked before about how people develop personalities through life experience modeling of their parents. And so this person who develops this in-charge kind of controlling personality is obviously or understandably drawn toward people who don't mind being controlled or people who need to be controlled. Another person B, develops more of a passive personality, and that person is drawn toward individuals who tend to take charge and maintain control. A typical thing might be the husband who married his mom. and the wife who married little brother or something like that. So in the marriage, A is going to complain that B never takes initiative, and B is going to complain that A is always over-controlling.
Right.
But the fact is that their personalities set them up to seek that person out. And so obviously, if A is going to control less, B is going to have to start stepping up.
Mm-hmm.
But if B is going to start stepping up, A is going to have to relinquish control. And so the rub comes in when neither one trusts the other to change. And frankly, a lot of people that come to counseling just don't believe they can change, even though, ironically, they've come to counseling to change. One of the difficult parts is getting people to actually believe they can. Mm. So these ingrained behaviors and defense mechanisms, personalities or defense mechanisms, involve a number of systemic factors. And so we've talked about a number of these in some other shows. Family of origin can include culture modeling, family structure, birth order, those kinds of things. Personality, what we develop a personality as a defense mechanism that it's defense, it's bent toward personal advantage and related factors factors related to personality. Life experiences, good or bad, and we've talked about relationships being distances that result from all of those things, family of origin, personality development, and life experience. So the result is that relationships tend to head toward a default where each person is protecting his or her own interest, and that's where these behaviors come from. So the problem with that approach then, in fact, the problem with also looking at some of these programs that personality inventories and these kinds of things that John Gottman, you know, looking for the right or taking these inventories that tell you what your your chances are of success or maybe if you're not married yet.
I think I took one of those in our premarital counseling.
Yeah, and taking that and so you're looking for the best shot at a match.
Right.
The problem with all that is that marriage is not primarily designed for comfort. It's primarily designed for change. Mm. And so some of the most unlikely people make some of the most solid marriages because marriage is about change. And this is really where the biblical worldview of marriage and the secular worldview of marriage have to part ways. The secular view of marriage is, of course, about being comfortable, being happy, that person meeting my needs and that kind of thing.
Right.
But the biblical perspective on marriage is that it's about changing us. So iron sharpens iron and that kind of thing. So, and now underlying all these various ways in which this systematic dance can present itself, or as we refer to it, sort of codependency too, is really a fundamental human trait of self-preservation. And, of course, that's rooted in shame and fear. Fear having to do, as we've talked again on some previous shows, fear having to do with our mortality. The fact that the one thing we can't control is when we're going to die, how we're going to die. We don't go around thinking about dying a lot, but we do think almost incessantly or continually about, do I have value? Am I of value? Do I have control over things that are impacting my life? Do I have power or resources? Those are almost like a sacramental for immortality. If we have those, we have a sense of
well-being.
Well-being, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. So that underlies all of that. And then I wanted to get to how Scripture kind of addresses that underlying human trait in a number of ways, but in one particular that pertains to marriage. And of course, we all recognize the Ephesians 5 Scripture.
This is this controversial scripture that, particularly in the modern age, mm-hmm. seems to cause mm-hmm. a lot of issues, mm-hmm. particularly for women, because this is the one about
I can understand
women
why.
Are supposed to submit.
Well, yeah, I think that men,
and it's one that a lot of abusive men though use to kind of keep their women under control, mm-hmm. and which is wrong also. You just need to submit. Don't
they don't understand that first part about laying down your life. Mm-hmm. Those two actually almost amount to the same thing. But, of course, that is, it's the Ephesians 5 where Paul is saying, that men are to love their wives as Christ loved the church and he gave himself for the church. And men should consider this, too, that he gave himself for the church so that he could present it spotless and without blemish or without blame. And husbands, I don't think, work hard enough to present their wives spotless and without blame. It's a tendency, as you bring out, to blame the wife. Adam started off.
Yeah,
that
he
way.
Started that.
He
all
started
off,
that ball
yeah.
rolling, didn't he? So it's not by whim. The man is told, if we paraphrase this and trim it down a bit, the man is, of course, instructed to lay down his life, the woman is instructed to be submitted to her husband. So this all, of course, for the man to lay down the life seems like, boy, that's, I think I got the heavy end of the board here. I have to lay my life down.
I don't know. Talk to some women, and submitting to that husband is pretty, pretty tough.
Yeah. The life that we're all supposed to lay down, in fact, the life that anyone is inclined to protect, is precisely what is keeping us from a deeper walk with God. So this idea of laying down your life is not something, it's not a punishment of some kind, it's actually a blessing, and God's put this person in my life for me to surrender to. The man has to surrender as well. The Bible is very clear, we're all to submit one to another. But then the woman's position relative to the man, the admonition to submit. That also addresses a particular characteristic, I think, in our human nature that resists the leadership of God. So it's almost in a sense that, yes, Paul is saying the husband is to lay down his life and the wife is to submit. And you could, arguably those are almost equivalent. The way in which he states it, you can see how that it gets right to the heart of issues that are generally speaking gender specific. Mm-hmm. Men have more problem with ego, and so they tend to be a little bit bullheaded, I think, often, and find it hard to lay aside that ego for this woman. And on the other hand, because women, generally speaking, tend to be more contemplative and self-governed, I think they find it difficult to submit to a man who seems to be often impractical and wrong-headed.
Mm-hmm.
But so these specific, often gender-specific traits, though, the instruction, if we can read it more broadly, the instructions are going really to the heart of a couple of characteristics in human nature that are really well dealt with in the the marriage relationship. You can see how that scripture, though, it cuts across the systemic dance that we've been talking about. And in fact, the systemic dance can be seen as an avoidant measure. We'll probably come back and talk about that after we break.
Yeah, interesting here for a stuff. Pretty basic. A marriage is meant to change you. That's news to some people, and if you need to get that cleared up and worked on a little bit in your marriage, or somebody you know about who needs help, Daniel would love to help you. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yeah, 425-778-6169, 778-6169. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, and of course, again, offices in Kirkland and Edmonds.
Back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast this week, Marriage Improvement, the Systemic View. On Sound Mind here in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Christian marriages are being attacked as never before, from outside and from within. Today more than ever before, you have to be proactive, learning to better be aware, to be more caring, and to be better communicators, recognizing and dealing with problems that are from within, from without, personal or relational. And that's where I can help you. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, the Sound Mind this week, looking at the subject of marriage improvement, the systemic view, how all of these things work together to the good of those who love Jesus and are submitted to each other in marriage.
Yeah.
That's the goal anyway.
Yeah, and the systemic view basically is, and one of the things that people struggle with, of course, as we said in the first segment, that people struggle with when they come in for counseling often is who really needs to change, who needs to change the most, who needs to change first. who needs to keep changing.
I'm not going to change until he changes.
Yeah, and they don't realize a lot of times that one behavior is actually driving A's behavior is driving B's behavior, which is again driving A's behavior. So it's like a circular.
So how is this different from we've heard the term codependency?
It's very similar to codependency. It's similar to codependency in a lot of ways.
You make me, I can't change because you're doing this.
Yeah. And then it's again, it's sort of like who nobody trusts the other person to. You know, you put down your club and I'll put mine. No, you first. And then another thing that happens a lot of times is because it's a systemic circular kind of thing. I will get someone to begin to change, a husband or a wife. I'll say if the wife is maybe she's not taking care of the chores around the house and the husband's over controlling, and I'll get her to maybe. Motivated to step up and take care of some things around the house, have supper ready and different, or greet him with a kiss when he comes through the door, something like that. The result will be he'll say, "Well, it's about time." And after all these years, you're gonna. So it was almost like he's not comfortable with the change because it doesn't fit in with his.
You don't mean it.
His position. So what he doesn't understand is that. There is, in a sense, a very real codependency where he has a personality, he has a posture in the relationship that's dependent upon her bad behavior, which he's complaining about.
Right.
And you see the shoe on the other foot too. Sometimes
Absolutely.
Gals that are over controlling and they want Peter Pan to put on his pants and step up to the plate. But when he does that, you did a fair job, but could have been done better. And I told you to do this, and so it just kind of takes the wind out of the sails. Mm-hmm. And so you see that, although the person is complaining, he or she won't do this or is continually doing that. When that other person starts to change, mm-hmm. they don't recognize mm-hmm. their responsibility. They're going to have to change to accommodate that change and to continue to motivate that change. A lot of times they don't see that or they're unwilling to. They don't see that their behavior was part of the problem. They see it as a result of the other person's behavior. Don't see it the other way around.
What's interesting, too, is I see this happen a lot of times when somebody, for instance, gets help, gets, for instance, like sober, is an alcoholic mm-hmm. for a long time and gets sober. And everyone's all used to dealing with this person as a drunk and as the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And when they start to change and start turning their life around, they don't have that as a card anymore to kind of explain mm-hmm. why they're behaving poorly. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it blows them out.
Yeah.
And the person is, I've seen this. Yeah. I've seen this. Believe
yeah.
me.
Yeah. So
that's a major codependency, but that's also, again, people... this systemic issue like you're talking about. Yeah. People have certain roles, mm-hmm. and they're totally ingrained, mm-hmm. and then when somebody really tries to change and really does change, mm-hmm. It doesn't work either. Yeah. It's almost worse.
Yeah, and I think people, again, in counseling, help them realize that they have actually, intuitively, they've sought this person out, A has sought B out.
Yeah, people don't believe that, but why is that?
Yeah.
What are some of the reasons people seek out certain systemic things? Is it purely family of origin stuff? Or
well, it's those three things. Mm-hmm. It's family of origins we talked about, and maybe personality too, and relationships being distances, life experiences, good and bad. So, yeah, all those things kind of come together. Those factors come together, and we choose basically choices in life and relationships in life that. Secure us for us our sense of value, control, and power. So sometimes, ironically, we choose a person with traits that we will wind up complaining about,
right.
And yet our kind of perception of the relationship and our position really requires that that person have those weaknesses or those dysfunctions. So in order for them to change, we have to change. And one of the things I constantly tell people is we're going to do things that won't feel natural, because if you do what feels natural, you're going to be doing the same thing over and over. So it'll feel natural after a while.
Well, how long does this take? Because, I mean, people are thinking, you know, okay, I want to make some changes. It needs to kind of be gradual, doesn't it?
But you can actually see the reward quickly. And a couple of things happen when people see the reward quickly. One, they either don't trust it, that it can be sustained. And two, again, since it's not natural, they're going to want to revert back to a previous behavior or some other spin on the behavior. Maybe I accept that person's change, but in order to maintain the relational distance, so maybe I will accept that my wife now has the meals ready when I come home, which is what I was complaining about, and the house is clean. But in order to maintain the relational distance that's comfortable and natural to me, I find something else. I start watching more TV. Or I find, reasons to get away from the house or argue or something like that. So I put another spin on it to maintain the distance.
Because her behaviors were his excuse for some of his dysfunctional behavior.
Yeah.
And I can't continue in my dysfunctional behavior now because she's changing hers.
Yeah. And the other thing that can happen is that the change can come and they're either not comfortable with it or they don't believe that it can be sustained. And so they don't... Or sometimes they don't recognize the value of it, too. But actually, the change can take place pretty quickly. So let's say the wife says, "My husband doesn't do any chores around the house," and so he goes, "Okay, that was pretty clear." She'll say, "Well, I've been telling you for 30 years." And he says, "Okay, but let's start today. So it's clear today. I'm going to turn over a new leaf." So he goes and starts doing some chores. Then she'll make a mistake of either kind of over celebrating that, patting him on the head too many times to make him feel like, well, that wasn't comfortable, or she might critique it, or she might say, "I wish you could have started this years ago," or something, anything. To make it feel like this is not going to be sustainable,
doing this because Daniel told you to.
That's another one.
You're not genuine.
Yeah, the counselor told, and so they say, "Yeah, it doesn't feel like probably a clear advantage or example would be if I tell Fred, your wife has said she wants you to be romantic. I just now asked her, what do you mean by be romantic? And she says, well, he could bring me flowers. So now your assignment is to bring flowers. So he brings flowers, and I caution her, it's not going to feel romantic because I just sat here in front of you and told him to do that."
Right.
But you have to start somewhere.
He needs to come up with it on his own.
Yeah, you have to start somewhere. And I've had people, even parents about kids and husbands and wives about, is it enough just to be going through the behavior without the emotion? Well, you can't reach in and flip a switch. Mm-hmm. You don't have control over how the person feels. But yes, it's important, the behavior. It's not faking it.
Start the behavior, start the actions first, and then the emotions will follow eventually.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Ultimately, I was talking about how that this Paul's straightforward kind of no nonsense. Husbands, lay your lives down. You don't have any more rights. And gals, submit to your husbands. It's almost equivalent. You can read it that way. Mm-hmm. And of course, gals have to lay their lives down too. I think that they're just probably more suited. So, the Bible tells the men to do that because possibly the women are already doing it. Mm-hmm. Women are to submit to that. And so you can see how those straightforward, just objective things can cut across the systemic idea of, well, hold it. He's doing that because I'm doing this because you're doing that. So all the excuses and the avoidant kinds of behaviors, it's just a straightforward, everybody be quiet, you lay down your life, you submit, that kind of thing. Ultimately, a marriage that's godly strong, I'd say enriched and fruitful, is never achieved by one person changing his or her behavior. Mm-hmm. Now, each case, of course, is unique, and we've talked about some of those. We could talk on and on about each. You know, there are, in some cases, there are abuses that need to be dealt with and counseled. They need to be considered. But the path of successful marriage counseling will always require that each person ask, and I go over this with clients again and again, what behavior do I do that solicits that other person's bad behavior, and how can I change that? Because there's something every single time. Mm-hmm. No one is completely innocent in that. So what behavior do I do to solicit that other person's bad behavior that I'm complaining about, and what can I do to change that? And then also, what behavior has encouraged? What did I do that encouraged that person's growth? What was it that I said just before he said, hey, you're right, I'm going to go out? And what did I do to get him to respond? And how can I remember to practice that behavior? So those mm-hmm. those things, you know, that's really fundamental to the way that these mm-hmm. people change eventually. Mm-hmm.
Well, marriage is the best form of behavior modification.
It is.
It can be.
Yeah.
It can be. In God's...
You're locked up. You can't leave.
Okay. Well, if people need help with their marriage or they know somebody who does need help, how do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yeah. Call me at 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. People also email me through website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. You're going to see this program and the podcast at BibleBasedCounselor.com. And offices in Edmonds and Kirtland.
Lots of programs, too, at BibleBasedCounselor.com. Always great stuff. Sound Mind, life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.